All right, we're in MSR world again. Galen Hunt, it's been a long time. How are you doing?
Great. Excellent. Good to see you, Charles.
Perfect. So I'm going to say the S word once. Last time you were on Channel 9, Singularity.
Yes,
I think it was the
Singularity.
Fourth edition.
Yeah.
And since then, you've been doing some very interesting research. Tell us a little bit about Drawbridge.
So we've been building Drawbridge. Let me tell you how we... So Drawbridge is two things.
Okay.
One of them is it's a new way of sandboxing applications. Okay, Windows applications. And the other one is it's a new, what we call a library operating system for running inside a sandbox. Okay.
Okay.
So Drawbridge addresses the same kind of problems that virtual machines, like Hypervisor, Virtual PC, those kinds of things, virtual machines address.
Okay.
And that is making it so we can, well, in fact, the initial reason why I started working on this was making it so I could download an arbitrary program off the internet, run it on my computer, and not have it take over my computer. Okay, so secure sandbox.
Sure.
Okay. The second thing that Drawbridge, kind of area that Drawbridge addresses is how do we maintain compatibility over a long time with applications. So, for example, when I write an application for, say, Windows XP, and I use the Win32 API, when I upgrade to Windows Vista or Windows 7, I don't necessarily know that that program is going to run. Now, the Windows organization puts a huge amount of effort into trying to make as much compatibility as ever can, mm-hmm. but it's not 100% compatibility.
Sure. Okay?
And so that's another problem that VMs are typically used for to address. And then the third one is an idea that some other... I'll use a term that has been coined out on the web, a continuous client experience. So, can I start my application on one computer and have it move to another computer and follow me along?
Yes, interesting.
And move back. And so we build a set of technologies that let us address those kind of issues much cheaper than have ever been addressed before.
Okay, so now real quickly, I mean, Library OS is not a new concept.
No.
And it's interesting that virtual machines have sort of dominated in this space traditionally, right? You mentioned Hypervisor. There's also application virtualization. I can run Adobe PowerPoint, in fact I do on my work machine, inside of the application virtualization host. It's running on a different file system than NTFS, playing those kind of games, but it's virtualized, it's not a library OS. So that's kind of a thing. I hope we can talk about those differences today too.
Okay.
But that's interesting. So library OS, very cool. Let's introduce some of the people
yes.
that are here. So you're Galen Hunt, of course. You're the big cheese, the head honcho.
Ruben Olinsky, developer. I'm working in the operating systems research group here in Microsoft Research.
Absolutely, right on.
And I'm John Howell, and I'm in the distributed systems and research group just down the hall.
Perfect. All right, so let's get into this. What exactly does it do?
And, all right.
You know, talk
well,
to me.
Well, okay. So maybe I think a good way to start talking through this is. Oh, you want to see the demo?
Are you kidding? We never got to see a demo for
well,
Singularity,
okay.
man. If we started
that's
it off
true.
That way.
We actually did do it. There
that's
was a
true.
Demo.
Revenge of the UI. We
yes,
saw some
yes,
blue
right.
text
that's
or
right,
something.
That's
yes.
Right. All right. Well, I think we need to explain a couple of kind of pieces of Drawbridge before
please
we
do
the demo.
All right.
So that the demo makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. And I think what we should do is have Ruben draw out the architecture.
Awesome.
Okay.
Of course, feel free to jump in if there's something yeah. I miss or gloss over quickly. Feel free to ask any questions along the way.
Of course.
So as Galen was mentioning, what we have with Drawbridge is sort of a new sandboxing approach. And one of the things that we realized is, gee, operating systems like Windows already have an existing approach for separating different applications, and specifically it's the process. It's a Windows process that usually, you know, you run your various different programs and whatever it's...
And I will interrupt right here.
Sure.
So and this idea of using processes for the sandbox unit was John's idea. John actually did a project called Zax.
Huh.
For how to... tell him very...
This is John.
Guys.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, it's a little odd to think it's clever to use a process to sandbox an application, since that was, in a sense, the original purpose of sandboxes, but their facility in doing that has decayed sort of as we've changed from that purpose to other purposes for operating systems as operating systems have grown. And so the observation that we had at Zax was that you could recycle most of the machinery in the operating system that's used to establish the process, as long as you just were careful to limit what else the operating system would allow that process to do. And once you make that observation, now there's this very lightweight way to provide virtualization that requires very little from the operating system or the machine under the operating system. But in exchange, you now have to have an application that can expect less of the operating environment. And so that's what the bulk of the work is in Drawbridge.
Interesting. We'll come back to that.
So I'll probably start here just doing a quick diagram of the way things work with the typical process in Windows as it looks today.
Okay.
So setting up at the top of your process is your application binary, which let's say for the sake of this example, you have Microsoft Excel. So we have Excel.exe that's sitting up here, and Excel.exe talks to the various different APIs that are made available from Windows, and those APIs are implemented in a variety of different DLLs. DLLs like User32 and GDI32, Kernel32, and so on and so forth, and many other different kinds of libraries. Underneath, these libraries talk to lower-level facilities provided by the operating system. In some cases, they may talk to NTDLL, which in turn talks down into the operating system kernel. This is MTOS kernel in the case of Windows. And also in a number of cases for, let's say, User32 and GDI32, talk into the Windows subsystem, and specifically a portion of the Windows subsystem implemented in kernel mode called Win32K. Mm-hmm. So this is a driver. It implements what you might think of as the window manager in Windows operating systems. And this is sort of the very high-level way a process works today. So one of the things we looked at here...
Can I interrupt you?
Absolutely.
Before you talk about how Drawbridge makes a library operating system,
go right ahead.
Let me characterize how a virtual machine does the same thing.
Sure.
That may help guide
cool.
understand Drawbridge. I'll use the only remaining color we have.
All right. Green will work.
It's the new economy.
That's right.
We can afford two colors.
So if... When you're running this process on a conventional copy of Windows, and we put another process over here, and let's suppose for some reason we want these to be isolated. Well, they're not going to be very well isolated because the thing they're going to share at the bottom is this kernel and maybe other services that are attached to the kernel. So it's difficult to do isolation in here, and this is a problem that we've worked on in various ways at Microsoft. But one of the ways that we solve this is with virtual machines. When isolation is the prime goal, what we can do is we can take this entire stack, the libraries, the application, the libraries, and the operating system and related services. Here's some other service over here, and bundle it all up inside a virtual machine guest, and then run that on top of a VMM, and then run whatever else we want alongside it. And so the philosophy there is now that we've got a narrower interface down here, this process is better isolated from other processes. When I say process there, I'm referring to the entire guest as a process. And so if you look at it this way, all of these things that we think of as the kernel, when they're stuck inside a guest, in a sense, all they are now is just library routines. This is just a bunch of libraries all stuck together providing service to Excel, because that's the only application sitting on top in that context. So when you look at this bunch of code that way, mm-hmm. it's not doing as much stuff as it was originally designed to do when it's used in this way. So now what Ruben is going to address, I trust, otherwise I've set you up all wrong, is how to take that same notion and look at it from the Drawbridge perspective. When you look at it from the VM perspective, you can use this stuff exactly as it came and just drop it right into a VM, and that makes it easy to do initially, but it has some costs.
Yes.
All right. Done with the green pen.
Good job.
Excellent. So something else to call out here with the existing applications is this interface, as John was sort of alluding to, between the application and what's running within a user mode process and the operating system underneath it. It's a fairly thick interface. There's something on the order of a few thousand API calls or interfaces between these application APIs and the components that are running here in kernel mode, NTOS kernel, Win32K. And, of course, with it, such a thick interface, that presents a number of challenges to application compatibility, to potentially, you know, attack vectors, in terms of there's just a lot more code that has to be correct across different versions across different implementations, or making sure that all of the kind of security checks that need to be done across this interface are being done for each of the individual API calls. So one of the things that we did when we were looking at constructing Drawbridge is we were looking at seeing, well, what's a much lighter weight version of virtual machines that we could go with? As John was sort of showing the world of virtual machines, can we take the portion of the operating system that really needs, you know, there ought to be one copy of it that's sitting there, is managing hardware, is making sure that multiple applications can be running simultaneously and using resources of the system, have that one solid copy of that. But for the portions of the operating system that are really providing application services, where we might need to have different semantics for different applications, and we want to make sure we are really carefully separating them, why don't we have multiple copies of those? And the way we actually went about doing this is we first started out in saying, well, this thing Win32K here, let's go ahead, and it traditionally been a kernel mode driver, or at least it had been since the days of NT4, before which it was actually running in user mode.
Remember what it does?
Win32K, excellent.
And by excellent me, question. I mean of yours.
The rest of the audience, sure. So Win32K includes support for basically windowing. Windowing window messages, actually drawing things on the screen, GDI primitives, various different things that you need if you want to have a graphical environment.
Fonts, printing.
Totally.
The things that you experience in Windows, Win32. Yeah. It's the Win32, yeah. Underneath the Win32 APIs.
That's right.
Enables it, powers it.
It's a significant portion of, you call, I guess, the personality of the Windows operating system. And one of the things we went ahead and did is we sort of started with the Windows 7 binaries and libraries, and we moved Win32K up into user mode as a DLL, sitting there such that there would be a separate copy of Win32K running for each of the different processes that are running within a Drawbridge environment. And so, among other things, that took a huge set of interfaces and moved them back up to within the same address space, the same context of the application. Of course, we made some changes over here to make sure that we're using this private copy of Win32K. Something else that we did is we looked at this very thick interface here with the operating system between NTDLL and the various different libraries here, and we tried to see how thin can we make that. Mm. What are the primitive operations and support we really need to be able to provide up into the application's domain that it needs just so it can get its job done? And one of the things we ended up doing was we crafted this interface of about 35 or so different routines that would be the new interface between the application and the operating system sitting underneath it. So one of the ways we did this is we created this thing called our security monitor that we've now inserted between our application and the operating system. We have a private copy of NTDLL that was based on the version of NTDLL from Windows 7. Mm-hmm. And instead, this NTDLL has what we call an emulation layer of NT underneath it. We call it NTUM for NT in user mode. And this provides about 100 to 200 different routines that would traditionally be provided by the operating system kernel. And we provided alternate implementations of them within the application.
So Ruben was pointing out earlier that as it's conventionally configured, there's a wide interface between NTDLL and the kernel. And by hoisting this up here, he's left that wide interface
right there.
And what's coming out of here is a narrower interface.
Yeah, right. And exactly. So this is that interface where there's about 35 routines.
And by analogy, also up here where we used to have this, so this was about 400 functions.
Okay.
And right here, there were about 800 functions between user and GDI into Win32K, and now they're still there, but they're all just function calls.
Understood. And you moved Win32K DLL into that user space so it runs in the same address space as the application that you're not virtualizing.
That's right.
That's right. Not only the same address space, but also the same protection domain.
Excellent. Okay. Very clear, man.
So that's, I suppose, some of the high-level details. Is there anything I missed? What are the other big points here?
Maybe the most interesting lesson, I guess one of the things that motivated pursuing this, is it's sort of surprising that you can do this. I mean, gee, if you can start with 4,000 system calls and boil them down to 35, why didn't we do that a while ago? And well, that's
a good question.
It's a complicated question that
sure.
I don't know that we'll be able to answer entirely here, but the the surprising observation is that you can get a long way through what you want applications to do with a more limited amount of functionality, and part of the magic is this idea of refactoring appropriately. With a good choice of refactoring, we can put a bunch of the functionality next door to the application, and that changes how much interface we need to go through.
And this actually speaks to what the press picked up as a big deal when in fact it isn't, which was the min-win kind of hysteria, which is what essentially the Windows team was trying to do in terms of dependency mapping and being able to understand what's the base bootable kind of chunk of code that we need for Windows.
Yeah.
And so in some sense, the reason I'm asking this question is because the library OS approach could mean that you could make changes in the user space more quickly than the guys in kernel mode need to, when they're really worried about hardware. So they could focus on the hardware stuff and dealing with a million cores, and you guys could focus in a much different path on the application level experience of an operating system, blah, blah, blah.
So it enables this much more a rapid independent evolution
of
both the code down in the kernel and the code above. And I think it's important that you brought up the min-win analogy, right? Because there was this huge hysteria about min-win, about, we're going to make Windows really small.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about making Windows really small. It was about the value to customers was that it allowed us to get some better separation between different pieces of the system so that they could evolve more rapidly. So at the end of the day, we've got drawbridge. Drawbridge doesn't mean, by the way, so one of the things Ruben has mentioned is our library OS. So from here to here is what we call the library OS.
Okay.
And our current version of the library OS is about 64 megabytes of binaries. Okay. But it's still, to run, say, and we can run, for example, we can run Internet Explorer on top of it, okay?
Nice.
But that doesn't mean, you only need 64 megabytes. Mm. Well, there's a whole bunch of other facilities down here. All the kernel drivers, all the file system, the networking stack is all still needed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We've just reorganized it in a way that we think ultimately allows some more rapid evolution of the system.
And doesn't it also mean, now you're again, I don't want you to stand next to the window because you look like you just got back from 10 weeks in Hawaii.
Sorry.
In some sense, you guys are going to be, there's no way that a virtual machine could be as fast as you guys are, right? I mean, because it has to, it has to essentially go through that layer.
There's the extra layer of hardware virtualization.
Exactly. So you guys, I don't know if it's true, but I mean, this promises to be a very fast experience. I mean, if you're using Outlook in a virtual machine, sometimes it can be slower based on what it's doing in GDI or whatever on the graphics card. But excellent. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Do I understand what I'm saying is what you're asking?
Right. I think an aspect of performance that we care a lot about is not looking at performance directly as much as memory consumption.
Okay.
One way in which VMs hurt you, the limit practicality, is that when you just package the entire operating system as a big library over and over again, use that repeatedly, that uses a lot of memory budget.
Okay.
And if you want to package a bunch of applications together, it becomes prohibitive.
Yeah.
And so the one observation at Drawbridge is that when you're an order of magnitude leaner on memory usage for that library, then you can now think about deploying this packaging arrangement in ways that you wouldn't have been able to do with virtual machines. You can wrap more applications more often.
And this also kind of, without jumping too far into the future, but we like to do that with poor Galen. But here's the thing: for mobile operating systems, this would be beautiful, right? To sandbox, to be able to not have to worry about what's underneath you and concentrate on this nice library OS model. Because you want rapid evolution, phone.
Well, and I think then getting the overheads, our overheads for one of these virtual machines, a drawbridge sandbox process is on the order of 16 megabytes of RAM, of actual working set. Okay. Whereas if you ran a full copy of Windows, if each app had to have, say, a full copy of Windows 7 in a virtual machine, it's on the order of, several hundred megabytes to a gigabyte of RAM overhead for each. And when you talk about phone, your phone doesn't have that much memory. You can't afford, there are some adventuresome souls who say, oh, we should put virtual machines on phones too.
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, the phones get really hot.
Yeah, and the phones get really hot because you've got all this power overhead and all this overhead. Yeah. Right? And but this is small enough. You can talk about doing it, you know, even on a phone.
Okay.
One of the experiments that Ruben has done, for example, we looked at IAS. So running web servers inside, you know, using this as a sandbox instead of a full virtual machine sandbox. Mm-hmm. And we had a 16 gigabyte machine, and we could fit on the order about 25 instances of Windows Server, you know, 2008 R2 inside in virtual machines, about 25 virtual machines we could run on that, serving up web pages. When we took the web server and moved it into a Drawbridge sandbox, we got north of 270 on the same hardware. Now, that's footprint. You know, if you can imagine, if one of those was getting hit constantly, there wouldn't be enough CPU to serve 270. You know, we haven't worked any magic that sense.
Yeah.
But in terms of how many you could put in for lightly loaded, it drastically changes the overheads.
Excellent. Very cool. So now you mentioned earlier in your introduction about that this is sort of a security play in some sense. But I don't see you guys creating, so in the application virtualization world, they created an isolated file system. And so you never can access NTFS, AppV. Thank you. So how do you guys, so when I launch one of these apps and you're going to show it to us soon, where does the data live and how is that virtualized? Not virtualized, but drawbridged.
So that's a good question. So among these 35 or so APIs, there's a set of APIs that you can think of as comprising a virtual file system. Basically, we call them streams, kind of a more generic term than files. But you can open files, read, write, delete, that sort of thing. And the responsibility of implementing that functionality is within our security monitor. So a security monitor is sitting on top of, you know, the native Windows operating system, and it's using NTFS and real file system stack. Mm-hmm. But one of the things it's doing is it's carefully going ahead and deciding based on policy, security policy that can be provided to it. It has a mechanism where it can decide, well, let's say this Drawbridge application wants to access a file in the Windows System 32 directory, some system file. It goes ahead and it looks up in its policy and it says, well, first, do I give this Drawbridge application permissions to access these resources? If that check actually passes, then it'll go ahead and it may redirect that request somewhere else. So we haven't necessarily taken kind of policy management to an advanced degree, but we have kind of that raw mechanism there in place where we can redirect things as needed, but underneath it's a real NTFS or traditional Windows file system making that happen. And the same is true for various different other kinds of resources. Mm. In the case of the registry, which is something else that other application virtualization techniques need to virtualize, we have an implementation of the registry that's sitting up in our NTUM emulation layer, where it's entirely within the sandbox. You never actually get out to the real registry. Uh-huh. And we're able to kind of populate a registry from files on disk and so forth, but whatever the application wants to do, if it wants to scribble all over all keys, delete things, make changes, they'll never actually get propagated back to your real system, and you can kind of be confident that those changes are kept right within that sandbox.
So is that so? Each instance, so if you drew another exe up there, because you can do that, you could have several of these running at the same time, they don't share the same registry instance. And
no.
They each get their own, so that's the SIP thing, right? These are. What about shared state and shared communication between these little exes up here? Sometimes it's useful to have these things communicate to one another. How would that work?
So we do have communication RDP across these applications. Uh-huh. There's traditional things you can do in Windows where sometimes you have applications that are very tightly coupled and they'll use Windows objects, let's say a named event in the Windows global namespace, or they might actually start scribbling over each other's memory. Now, a lot of those applications, frankly, aren't going to work within our model. We built the Drawbridge system to prevent those kinds of isolated applications from doing that to each other, either, you know, intentionally or maliciously. Mm. What we do have is things like name pipes or things like sockets and ways so that, you know, traditional ways that applications talk to each other across the network, across different machines, those can all work within this world. Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the way we are able to get things like Internet Explorer working.
Yeah. In fact, John's kind of John on this is our spiritual security advisor. and what he'll say is, the only way things should share is through the network, through network protocols.
Yeah, this is definitely an open area of research, but
yes.
The philosophical model, I'm sure, religious model that I've been operating under, just that I've been exploring, yeah. is it says, you know, on any given machine, we've evolved a security model that, you know, once we admit a process or a program onto that machine, well, it's inside the barrier, it's inside the firewall, and there's some level of trust there, and maybe we've got some protections to keep it from writing things in the wrong place. But in practice, what we've found is that, you know, we really have to be careful with what we let onto that machine, because it might find a privilege escalation vulnerability or some other vulnerability and be able to do more than we expect. Mm-hmm. And in the end, the philosophy that seems to have been the most robust over the last decade or so has been, well, you know that if you put something on a different machine, you can say something about what it can access, because that machine's models that everything beyond it on the network is scary. It's the big, it's the, you know, the, sure. the high seas of the internet out there, right? And there's pirates.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And so, you know, and so the model, you know, you wrap that machine with a firewall, you carefully close its ports or whatever, but you look at the perimeter level of the machine. And so the model is that when you communicate over the network, but that affords every administration domain the opportunity to control what comes in and out of that domain.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that model shows up here in Drawbridge is that if what you're allowed to do, and this is, you know, and we can't resist the appeal back to the same channels model from Singularity, if every application's interaction with the outside world is via network communication, then it's clear that application has the opportunity to either engage in or refrain from engaging that activity, or decide how it's going to filter those interactions.
Excellent, and you know. To use the singularity word again, I'm sorry, but I mean it is the policy structure that you guys had in
place.
Yeah,
well, in fact, we have one of the ideas out of singularity was these manifests.
Yes.
And at the manifests labeled what were the binaries that ran inside of a process, mm-hmm. and what connections were those binaries allowed to the outside. Mm-hmm. Now, we haven't brought in the contracts. I mean, it's not to the level of formalism here, because
sure.
this is native binary code, it's not managed code like Singularity was, but we have a manifest associated with each one of these processes, and the manifest whitelists which services, which things outside of the process it's allowed to talk with.
Mm-hmm.
So like one of our default manifest policy, for example, is that the program only can talk to files that are in its private directory tree. It's this tree, and that's all that it can have access to. There was one other thing I wanted to make sure we got in.
Please.
In this, and that is one of the things with Win30K is it wants to talk to a keyboard, mouse, and screen, right? Windows apps really want to know.
Yes, they do.
And so our question was, well, how are we going to bring a keyboard and screen and mouse into this environment?
Over the network.
And going back to John's philosophical philosophy here, was over the network. And so what we actually did is we brought in the remote desktop protocol, the server for the remote desktop protocol. And
okay.
we actually put a copy of it inside the process with Win32K. And so then when we want to bring it out to the user, out to the shell, we actually open up essentially a socket out through the security monitor. And then over here, you know, the RDP client can then connect to it. And that's actually how we bring, keyboard and mouse.
Wow.
Screen, and it's also how we do clipboard,
hmm.
because RDP has an ability to clipboard. And it in talking about like the administrating, how do you think about what my policies around this?
Hmm.
That's kind of a nice model, because people understand when they do RDP, there's a little checkbox that says, do I want my clipboard shared with this application or not? You know.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
very 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 cool.
I think we're about ready for a demo.
I think we should see this. I think so. I mean, I think it's probably clear. I mean, so just to be clear, this is, in order to implement this, you guys made some changes to Windows 7. You had to, or
yeah.
you wouldn't be moving things up and
yeah.
down the stack. And it would be interesting to know, like, in terms of the performance differences between Excel running in Drawbridge and Excel just running natively on Windows. There has to be some sort of, nothing comes for free, but it looks like maybe you guys are close to disproving that, because you actually re-architected the operating system itself to enable a Drawbridge type experience.
Well, we flipped things around. Well,
yes.
There's some interesting, so it's not obvious what the performance. Okay, so let's
fair enough.
So one of the things that happens is, so in one way that it could potentially be faster than the way Windows is factored right now, is that right here, for example, between, you know, say GDI 32 and Win32K, Windows does, in regular Windows, that's a trap down into Win32K, down in the kernel. So you have to transition from user mode to kernel mode.
Sure.
And in fact, Windows does a bunch of things where it buffers requests and batches them up and tries to minimize the number of calls across. Well, here in Drawbridge, it's just a function call across into this to this DLL that's in the same address space. Mm. And so you don't pay any of those overheads of switching from user mode to kernel mode. Now, when we actually go to put the bits on the screen, we have to go through this RDP layer, and so there's more overheads
so
there.
Playing a video, for example, is going to be a pestle.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because playing a video is strictly moving bits to the screen, and so that's a place where we're adding overhead.
Yeah, and so you know that would be kind of our worst-case scenario where you would see the most overheads of Drawbridge. And it would be kind of overheads on the same of like, you know, if people have had the experience of trying to run RDP and run video across it, and it's kind of about what it looks like.
Interesting, but I thought that was sort of because of the physical distance between the electrons on either end.
Yeah, well, it turns out even if you put the electrons right up close to each other, there's still some overheads in
there. Fair enough, I'm sure. Okay.
More data copies.
And we haven't done anything to optimize that here right now. You know, our focus has been kind of desktop applications.
Sure.
And you know, could we even make this
possible? And a proof of concept. That's awesome. That's really awesome.
And it is. You know, it's very much at this point, it is a prototype, proof of concept. When we show you
the it's not the next version of Windows?
It is definitely not the next version.
We're not done with the box.
But now it's not going to get slash-dotted, man.
Oh, just kidding. That's too bad.
No, this is very interesting.
And you know, and when we show you the demo, it may crash a couple of times as we run the demo, right? Because it's very much proof of concept.
Perfect.
But
anyway. Cool, let's see it.
All right, let's see it.
And then we can talk more about what we're looking at.
Grab my... show my bald spot as I bring my chair over here. Oh, yeah, okay, you're not typing my...
You're not looking at your password.
I'll remember to change my password.
No, I'm not looking at it.
Before this goes live. All right. Okay, so we're going to run... I'm going to run a script that runs this application. So we're going to run Excel 2010 underneath Drawbridge. Okay, and the output that you're seeing here is the output from this. It's the debug output from the security monitor. Okay, and there's a couple of we start off the security monitor and we tell it that we want to run Excel.exe. Okay.
Okay.
Now there's a couple of things you're going to notice in looking at this output. One of them is you'll see right here. There's this win32k.dll. Okay. So Win32K, rather than running using the one out of the kernel, we're actually running this private copy out of the library OS. Okay, and then and things like kernel 32. Now, kernel 32 is normally loaded into a Windows 32 process, and it gets loaded in the app. The binding, the OS says load Windows/System32/kernel32. Well, we're not getting that one. We're getting this other one, and at the virtual file system level, so up inside the process, it thinks it's asked for System32/kernel32. Then as we go through the security monitor, we apply the policy to translate that into, well, which file do we want to actually give access to? And it might have been a not whitelisted file, in which case it wouldn't have got any access at all. Okay. So the other thing you'll notice here is... there's no UI on this screen. You can't see Excel. Okay, that's because it can't even talk to the local desktop because the local desktop is using a private copy of the win32k.sys in the kernel until I connect an RDP client. Okay. So now I'm going to connect an RDP client, and there you see, okay, now this is Excel.
Nice.
Okay, this is our Excel from the Drawbridge container. Okay, and we're going to pick some numbers here and fill out a spreadsheet, okay? Or fill out a... We're going to make a simple... We're going to use a pie chart, okay? So pretty much all of the features work. The basic features of Excel work. There's three things that immediately don't work right now.
Okay.
So we can't print, okay? Because it's a prototype proof of concept and we haven't wired up printing yet. There's still work there. We can't do a file open dialog, and we can't do a file save as dialog because that requires some additional code that we haven't brought into the system yet.
Okay.
But we can open and save files. We just can't see them at that UI.
But those are just engineering tasks.
It's engineering tasks, yep. Okay.
Those are restrictions on the demo version.
Okay, now... Now I'm going to do something you've probably never seen happen with a Windows application. One of the things about these 35, 40 APIs that we have at the bottom, the interface, the Drawbridge kernel interface, is that it's stateless. And what I mean by stateless is if it loses its connection to the kernel, we can reconstruct that connection to the kernel. Okay, and so when we exploit that, one of the ways we exploit it is I can hibernate a single application. I can suspend it and write it out to disk all by itself, not affecting any of the other applications, just that single one. Nice. Okay, and I'm going to do that right now. So I hit the command, okay, and it's done. Okay.
Okay.
So in under a second, we took all of the pages that had been modified in that process, including the private ones inside Win32K, and we wrote them out to disk. Okay. And in this particular case, so we wrote it out to this dump file, and it's about 30 megabytes. Okay. We've done any kind of optimization. Now, if we compress that dump file, it goes down to 3.6 megabytes. Okay. So it's on the order of the size of an MP3.
Nice.
Now, one of the things we all know about MP3s is how quickly we can move them around on the internet.
Yes. Okay.
And in so fact,
interesting.
So in fact, one of the things I've just done is, while we were talking, it copied this compressed memory image of my Excel up onto the cloud.
Nice.
Okay? All right. We'll come back to that in a minute.
Yes.
Okay? But I want to point out that we did that. Do that. We moved it up in the cloud. All right. I'm going to tell this to go ahead, and what I'm going to do is it's going to restore Excel here on my local computer. Let me scroll back up here just a little bit so you can see. So what we did is we invoked the Drawbridge Security Monitor and said, please restore this process from this dump file, and its root directory should be the Excel directory. Okay.
Excellent.
And there it is, and it's what we were just looking at.
Yep.
Okay. Again, in less than a second, we were able to bring it back. Okay. Now, so you can flip these things around pretty fast. Now, I'm going to go ahead and quit this, okay, and I'm going to start a web browser, okay, point it back up the cloud where I just was.
Now, is this a web browser running in Drawbridge?
So this is, this actually is not a web browser running in Drawbridge, and this doesn't look very promising at the moment. Yeah, I don't think this is going to work. All right, hold on.
That's all right.
So, like we said, it is a prototype. It doesn't occasionally have problems with the demo. All right. Oh, and it doesn't help if I can't remember my password either. Ah, yeah, okay. It did actually die over here. Okay. Okay, now I'm going to hit the web page again. Okay.
Nice.
All right. And what we have here, it's a Silverlight RDP client running inside the browser.
Wow.
Okay. I've taken this program that I started on my desktop, I've moved it up in the cloud, and now I can access it from any machine that has cloud access. Okay. That's just one of the things I can do because I've got this nice sandbox around it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now the other thing, and to kind of just close off the demo, let me close this here, is we've got a large number of applications that we've made run on top of this. So it does. The prototype only implements about 14,000, somewhere between 14,000 and 15,000 of the Win32 APIs, because that's all we've put into our library OS. Okay. Out of somewhere on the order of 250,000 APIs that are in the full Windows 7 version of Win32.
Wow.
So there's a lot of kind of outlying things that
sure
won't work. But we also have a large class of applications that will run on top of it. Okay, and I'll bring them up. Okay, and here's just a sampling of some of the things we've run on it. So it was Excel that we've already shown. Okay, so you've seen Excel 2010. Here's PowerPoint 20. Oops, I don't want to do that. Here's PowerPoint 2010. And it's fully live, running inside Drawbridge. We've got Word, some of the applications out of Windows 7. So the WordPad application, the word processor, the Paint
nice
application runs as well. Here's Notepad, everybody's favorite. And there's even a little bit of Drawbridge source code.
Ooh, okay. Shall I show people?
No, we're okay. We haven't shown very much. Okay.
Right.
Here is IE8. And in this case, for all of these, what we've done is we're using the latest shipping versions of these applications. So we're not using any pre-binary, we're not using the when the IE9.
IE9 release candidate.
Release candidate or anything else. Okay, but anyway, and this is today. So if you go back and look, you'll actually be able to see which day we recorded this on. Right?
Oh, yes.
Here's today's, and let's see, we can even. So the Westminster Dog Show is what's popular today. Okay, we'll see how long that takes to go up there. Okay, this window right here is a CLR demo application. So we've got CLR 4.0 running inside of Drawbridge as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, and our results are back, by the way, for the Westminster Dog Show, in case anybody really wanted to
watch
our video just to find out. And then the last thing that we'd like to show is everyone's favorite original Windows game. This is the very first game to run on Windows, which is Drawbridge, and we'll quickly see why I'm not a professional reversi player.
Nice, okay. Though.
Okay, so you can see we have quite a large number of applications that are able to run in this as well.
Excellent.
Some other things we have, for example, IAS, the worker process is run in this, so we can do the server type, some server type applications as well.
Very cool. So, I mean, let's in conclusion, because I know you guys have to get back to work, but we can get a little random and ask some questions. When you set out for your original goal of doing this, right? I mean, where you are today and what you kind of envisioned. Let's talk about that map. Yes.
That's a good question. Well, so let me tell an anecdote really quick. So the first, John had done the process, the ZAX isolation, when I thought about trying to do this for Win32 applications, my motivation was one day I went home to find my wife and my two kids staring off at each other against the computer, because there was a pop-up dialogue that said, "Do you want to install this application?" Okay. And tell the story of what I tell is we're raising our children as Mormons, and there's three things my kids know they do not ever do. Right? So premarital sex is out, drugs and alcohol is out, and in the same moral equivalence class is never install software on your mother's computer because it's almost as dangerous.
Okay.
In trying to figure out how to solve that, the thing we can't do yet. They were trying to run a game called Wizard 101. That's a 3D game. We still can't run Wizard 101 on Drawbridge, right? Because we haven't got 3D accelerated hardware in this, for example. Yet. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, we have a large class of applications that can run on top of it. We've shown that the migration works, which I think is a pretty compelling feature, a thing that we can't do very well. We can't think about doing with regular Windows apps right now. And we've done some prototyping in terms of running the Windows. So one of the things we want to prove also is the compatibility story. Mm. That say you could build an application for, say, Windows XP, for example. Let's say you had an XP application in your line of business in your corporation and be able to run it on a Windows XP library OS on top of Windows 7 or Vista or whatever else and have it still run because it was still compatible. And we've done some experimentation around that, but haven't really proved that point out yet as well.
Sure.
I don't know. Anything else, guys?
So in terms of the hardware acceleration, is that mainly just a sort of an engineering time problem? Or because in a virtual machine, it's because there is no way you'd have to virtualize.
Yeah, no, this one is actually an open research question. Yeah, John's done some thinking about this.
Yeah, I mean, the CPU virtualization, in particular with encapsulation, works well because CPUs, since the beginning of time, have had memory management units that are there exactly to provide isolation. They do a very good job of it, and it's only the operating system that violates the boundaries that it sets up with the memory management unit when you trap into the operating system and say, now please do something across this boundary. Mm-hmm. GPUs were born in the era of desktop computing when that wasn't really relevant, and so GPUs... that was just not a design constraint. There's no reason that the hardware in GPUs couldn't be added. It's not a difficult hardware design problem. Mm. But the question is, there's a chicken and egg problem. If what we want to do is isolate Wizards 101 on machines that are out there that don't have any protection hardware in the GPU design, well, there's a difficult question there, because the way this works is the application slops a bunch of code that we've never seen, nobody's ever seen before, at least the operating system has never seen before, down into the GPU, and that code can go to town and do whatever it would like to do, and sometimes that means talking back on the bus and poking at the CPU's memory, perhaps. understanding what we can do to add performance isolation for the GPU when the GPU doesn't provide the hardware support is interesting. Now there are murmurs that that the industry may move toward. Yeah, that's right. The industry may move toward this. In particular, as GPUs get used for applications besides single user, you know, blowing things up, right? As GPUs start to see lots of other applications in VLIW scientific codes and so on. There, you've got multiple applications. You can imagine wanting to virtualize those and run in multiple applications in the cloud and share these resources and so on. And as soon as that happens, that just smells like a different shaped CPU, and it, by golly, ought to have the same architectural features as a CPU for doing isolation.
Interesting. But clearly the irony in all of this, though, is, you know, once everyone starts going towards the GPU, we'll start going to conferences where they talk about, and there's a CPU on your machine that's sitting around basically doing nothing because everyone's doing stuff on the GPU, and then we'll come back and have that conversation again.
Yeah.
One
of the questions you might have asked is, you know, why not try to run IE9, right?
I didn't want to ask that question.
Yeah, well, I mean, so let's in the spirit of full disclosure,
okay.
You know, this is one where, you know, some of the most compelling new features of IE9 are the GPU acceleration, right?
Yes.
And so we can't do those yet. So that's why it's, you know, this is very much, you know, a prototype. We're still working on this thing and trying to evolve it.
Absolutely.
But we're excited about the results so far.
I think, yeah, it's great. It really is. And I have to ask you this because this is what we're going to be asked when we put this on Channel 9. Hey, can I download it and play with it? Of course not. But, you know, proof of concept, research, experiment. But it's actually, the cool thing about this is that you've sort of revived the library OS research discipline.
Yep.
And that's really nice to see because it's sort of, people don't know the history of VM, you know, how VM got where it did. There was also this other idea that you're seeing can be applied to a general purpose operating system as gigantic as Windows. And that's very, very cool work, you guys, for a very small team.
Thanks.
So we'll come back and visit you again, hopefully.
Yeah.
And maybe that next time we won't even mention Singularity now.
We'll try not to.
Take care.
Thanks, Charles.
Thank you.